afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative Call. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Ms. Anne Wendland. Anne, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Erin. Good afternoon. This is Anne Wendland, Cessation Programs Manager for the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Tobacco Control, and on behalf of the New York State Tobacco Cessation Centers and the New York State Smokers Quit Line, I would like to welcome you to today's call, What You Should Know When Treating Your LGBT Patients' Tobacco Use. You may view today's presentations in two ways, as a webinar or by downloading the slides posted on the New York State Smokers Quit Line website. The slides and a link to the webinar posted on the collaborative call page of the Quitline website, nysmokefree.com. To access today's presentation, go to nysmokefree.com. On the left-hand side of the website homepage, there's a newsfeed section. Directly under this heading is an announcement for today's call. Click on the link provided, and it will bring you to another link for today's presentation. On that same page, under resources, you will also find a list of the New York State Cessation Centers and their respective service areas. Cessation Center staff are available to assist your organization with developing and implementing tobacco dependence treatment policies and clinical protocols. Our featured speaker today is Dr. Scout, Director of the Network for LGBT Health Equity and Adjunct Assistant Clinical Professor at Boston University School of Public Health. As the network director, Dr. Scout leads a team that provides technical assistance to state and federal health policymakers and works to link local LGBT health advocates to one another. On today's call, Dr. Scout will discuss tobacco use among LGBT groups, barriers to providing and receiving tobacco dependence treatment, and strategies you can employ to develop a culturally and linguistically sensitive healthcare environment to treat LGBT individuals. We are pleased to offer CME, CRCE, and OASIS continuing ed credits to our listeners of today's presentation. To fulfill the requirements for continuing education credits, we are required to disclose the following. Dr. Scout has no real or perceived vested interests that relate to this presentation, nor does Scout have any relationships with pharmaceutical companies and or other corporations whose products or services are related to pertinent therapeutic areas. To obtain continuing education credits, follow the instructions on the course credit and evaluation forms posted on the Quitline website. In addition, at the end of the webinar, you can complete the forms online if you prefer. Links to the online and paper forms are included in the bottom of the webinar chat box and on the Quitline website. Please remember, applications for credit will not be accepted after September 18th. That is 1 week from today. So please be sure to submit your applications as soon as possible to receive credit. Now it is my pleasure to turn the call over to Dr. Scout. Scout?
Thank you very much, everybody. Hi, everybody. And I love that I can see, is it Barbara Hart? Are you Bobby? Is that it? Hi, Bobby. Well, I appreciate doing this, actually. New York is actually where I got my, you can't hear me? If you can't hear me, you got to call in separately. It's not on the webinar, it sounds like. There's a separate call-in number. So maybe actually let's do just some ground rules. And, okay, as Barbara gets on the call, for everybody else, if you want to say something and you're on the webinar, please just say something in the chat box because I'll be monitoring that, and I absolutely love questions. So don't be one of those webinars that bores me with no questions whatsoever, please. And please speak up and ask, especially since we've got to kind of cover a lot of stuff pretty quickly. So I'm going to kind of, you know, run through things. And a question's a great way to figure out if I'm going too fast or if there's something I've covered insufficiently. So New York State is actually where I did my PhD in public health, and I love that I'm coming back now to do some training on this stuff because obviously we run the Network for LGBT Health Equity, which is funded as a tobacco control network. So this is primarily what we do, is we spend half our time convincing public health people to include LGBT people in their tobacco and other work, the other half the time encouraging LGBT people to include tobacco in their work. So with that, let me run forward here and Today's objectives, as you saw on the handout, we're going to discuss the high prevalence. We're going to identify barriers that contribute to the prevalence and make it challenging for treatment. And then we're going to talk about more than two things, at least, where you can do in order to help do a better job of serving LGBT people at your agency, whatever part of cessation you're involved with. So with that, we're going to jump into the orientation is going to, I know that we're in too large of a call to ask questions really easily until the end, except for the chat box stuff, so please do that. But nicely, since we've done these types of presentations a bunch of times, I'm going to try and predict the kind of things that would be a little bit more questions, and there's more information on the slides than I'm going to cover in this time, but that way you can go back and reference them, but I'm going to make sure I hit the highlights from whenever we do these presentations live and interactive so that so I hopefully will be covering the types of things that are kind of some of your bigger issues in prevalence, in LGBT cultural competency, and in how to do a better job reaching and serving LGBT people. So first of all, LGBT smoking prevalence. And I'm sorry, to start out, LGBT stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. We're going to be talking about the terminology just a little bit later. But first of all, let me just go through kind of the why we're here and why there even is a webinar on LGBT tobacco cessation, and answer the big question of how does cessation work differ for LGBT people. And I'll give you a hint, actually. It doesn't differ a lot, but it differs in some really key areas. We don't quit smoking differently. That's not where the difference is. It's going to be somewhere a little bit other than that. So under prevalence, you know something, I can go through a bunch of studies and give you lots and lots of data, but the truth is all of it is going to sum up to this information, that all these full population studies all around the country looking at the LGBT population at large or looking at subsets of the LGBT population show that we have smoking rates that are between 35 to 200% higher than the general population. So this is actually one of the most dramatically high smoking rates we can find of any subset of people, unfortunately. And, oops, we have a big problem with LGBT folks in general in that our questions are not always added onto surveillance instruments. Well, actually, it's more of a problem with surveillance administrators than it is with LGBT folks, right? So it means we've got huge holes in our data. And that means when you look at subsets of the LGBT population, like LGBT people of color, we have even less data and more holes. But what we've got, what we can see, and you can see some studies quoted here, the takeaway is, if you're from a multiply stigmatized population, like an LGBT person of color, your smoking rate is higher than your referent racial or ethnic group and higher than the referent LGBT group. So in other words, those two different things have a tendency to multiply with each other instead of simply just be you reference one of the groups or another group. Obviously, stigma is a complicated subject, but we can see it playing out in tobacco in a lot of places, and sure enough, here is one of the places where we see it in higher rates of usage. But remember also that the disparity for any population doesn't just have to do with higher rates of usage. It has to do with more barriers to care and problems treating and fewer successful cessation attempts. So you're going to see it here again, and it's basically making the same point that you see that for Latinos, for Black, African Americans and Blacks, Asian American, Pacific Islander, every time we measure them, their rates of smoking are higher than the Latinos and as well higher than the LGBT white people who are measured in comparison. Transgender, again, another subset of the LGBT population. We, again, have some real big data gaps. But the biggest one we have here is that middle point on the slide, the National Trans Discrimination Survey, and there we see that the smoking rates are 50% higher than the general population. Yeah, that's right. You guys get on, Barbara and your friend, get on together now. That's good. Can you hear us now finally? Good. Thank you. Good. I'm relieved. I felt like I was talking to no one there for a second. So the National Trans Discrimination Survey, basically trans people smoke at higher rates as we had predicted, and that's actually a bigger problem for trans folks, especially because there's a lot of complications related to surgeries and things like that that go on. For youth, there's a few slides here. They tell a consistent story, basically, that the smoking rates for LGBT youth right now, and you can read into the details, but the message is smoking rates for LGBT youth are right where the general population was in the 1980s, in the early 1980s. So in other words, the tobacco control movement is 30 years behind the times in reaching LGBT youth. It's a lot higher than it is for other youth, and unfortunately, we're not seeing them drop. So what that tells us is unless this is countered aggressively, the disparity is poised to continue for decades into the future unless we do something to succeed in interrupting this chain of uptake and augmenting the cessation. So basically, on the surveillance, the takeaway is, across all sorts of research, and this is full probability studies, this is not bar-based surveys, some, if not all, LGBT groups consistently demonstrate significantly higher smoking rates than the general population. Unfortunately, as I told you, it's not just smoking rates, it's access to care, and that's where you're going to see that there's some big problems that you can help intervene on to help with the success and cessation. Okay. So why do LGBT people smoke more? You've heard me mention the word stigma. Not shockingly, that's really going to be the thing that holds all of these disparities together. We see it in a lot of populations that experience social disparities related to health, that addictions are one of the things they go to. But let's go through the exact specific things we find. First one is just the range of stigma, homophobia, transphobia, racism, and sexism. Unfortunately, stigma is very common in the healthcare industry with the LGBT population still, maybe more common than you might guess, which means as it's built into the healthcare industry, it's also built, you know, in the rest of the world. So not only is uptake affected, but then also that cessation is affected too. So this is what we usually do in the live presentation, so I just want you to think of this answer in your mind. In most states, is it legal to fire someone for being gay? Barbara and your friend, what do you say, yes or no? You going to nod something for me so I can see someone answer? Is it most legal to fire someone for being gay in most states? Yeah, you're nodding yes. You're actually very correct, and a lot of people don't understand this, as a matter of fact, because like in some states like New York, it's not right now, right? But, well, it's partially not. This map right here that you see on the screen, all the white states, you can be fired, kicked out of your job, kicked out of school, kicked out of your apartment, kicked out of a hotel. All these things can happen with no legal redress whatsoever in all the states with white on the screen. And the reason I say this, even if you're not in a white state, is because this is the knowledge that LGBT people come to the interaction with. They understand that they do not have civil, that we do not have civil rights, and that that's been a big battle. There, and the reason why this is, people often ask, is because, you know how it says, we can't discriminate based on blank, blank, and blank in the laws? That means that in every state, it's a fight to add sexual orientation and gender identity into that law. The pink states here, which New York is actually one, I'm not sure if that's up to date, but it's as of January 2012, that seems old, but it's the most recent one that the task force had up. It says that New York State doesn't have gender identity, so pink is only sexual orientation, which means gender identity is not protected for the state. Of course, we know it is for the city of New York, but not for the state. That may or may not still be current. But you can see here, basically, only the blue states protect those civil rights, and then even in the blue states, it doesn't automatically include educational facilities. So that means in a lot of them, they have to have passed a different law to just protect you in a high school or college or something like that. So this is the knowledge that other people really come to the table with, which shapes how they approach the system, whether or not they feel that they are going to have any redress if they get bad care. Like, for example, let's see. When I was applying for PhD programs, I applied to a place in Indiana, and University of Indiana. And literally, when I didn't get in, I asked them why, and they said it's because I was trans, which just seems crazy, right? But, yeah, right? Exactly. I love that reaction. It seems crazy. And I thought to myself, I'm sorry, is it legal for you to be saying this to me? And I realized, actually, it's perfectly legal, actually. I have absolutely nothing to do except, you know, fuss. And that was years ago, but it's still true to this day. So this is the kind of thing that, again, people come to the table with this knowledge, and that affects how they perceive you. Okay, so how many people are LGBT? There has been that, you know, thing gone around is 1 in 10. That actually is not accurate. 1 in 10 people may actually identify to themselves as LGBT, but if you're asking who will disclose it to a stranger on a survey, so in other words, their identity is that much related to the communities that they'll say it to a stranger, the answer is approximately the population of the state of New Jersey out of the United States. And the nice part about this is this is the old discrimination trick, right? You take something that's like value-laden, like LGBT, you replace it with something that's not as value-laden, like New Jersey. We're going to say it's not as value-laden. You know, they have a couple of stereotypes, but not as many. And then you say, would it be reasonable if we lived in a country where everybody in the state of New Jersey didn't have civil rights? That's when it starts to sound kind of ridiculous, right? Can you kick everybody out of the state of New Jersey, out of a restaurant, or, you know, out of a job? That's unfortunately still the situation we live in the country, and that kind of shows you how it gets a little unusual. I've been trying to pass these civil rights protections at the national level, but for as long as I've been an adult, they've been trying and haven't yet succeeded. Okay, second reason why. Because a lot of you work in tobacco, so you know that if you make it to age 19, you're kind of scot-free, or age 21, roughly. So most all youth uptake happens at that teenage years. And, of course, in those teenage years, another thing often happens with the LGBT population, that's because of puberty or something like that. We often figure out that we're different than everybody else, and many people come to awareness that they're LGB or T in that exact same time period. So here you've got coming out, I'm different, and then you've got the exact time range where the tobacco industry is really looking to pick you up. It's also a way to relieve stress, things like that. It's a really bad mix right there. And then, of course, just a note, there's a difference with LGBT populations versus some other ones, and that's that they're not usually born into a family that's also LGBT, so can teach them how to be safe, how to navigate stigma, what to avoid, what neighborhoods to live in, what not to live in. Often the family is actually one of the harshest stressors they have, is lack of family acceptance. Okay, third reason, that when you get together with other LGBT folks, of course, if they're smoking a lot in the first place, it's like a socially transmitted disease, right? So if your smoking rate's that much higher in the population, and then you're like, oh, let me find my people, and they're smoking all over the place, and you get to smoke to your place, they're always smoking, passes it on. So unfortunately, you know, it's a built-in thing that keeps replicating itself. And the fourth reason, I'm going to show you a couple of ads examples here. Tobacco companies have done a good job of targeting us, like they have with everybody else in the world, right? If you're there to target, they will target you, and we're one of the people that they've identified, and we can see in the documents, that are easy to build brand loyalty, especially because in our own media and magazines, not too many years ago, very few companies were advertising, and some of the first companies to come in were the tobacco industry, so we developed a lot of gratitude. They also twist our civil rights messages to make it look like they're pro-tobacco messages. And they did that just because they hired a few consultants cheap from our own community. I can give you a few names of New York State residents that they were expert consultants on these points. And these people said, well, we're not naturally tobacco supporters, but on the other hand, make it look like our civil rights battle, then you'll have a winning thing. So you see, this is the excerpt. This is an ad from a gala for an LGBT event. And it says, whenever someone yells, dude, that's so gay, we'll be there. But of course, that's Lucky Strike saying we'll be there. So you can see it's an absurd concept, but they've succeeded in building our brand loyalty. Here's another lovely one, American Spirit. That's so American Indian tobacco company, right? Freedom to speak, to choose, to marry, to participate, to be, to disagree, to inhale, to believe, to love, to live. It's all good. Or I'd like to say actually, no, it's not all good. Save for two words, to inhale, it's all good. But those two words make it very, very different. So you can see, and I'm an impact on communities here. We basically have, and what this says is quoting some stats, and you'll see it all over the place. We have a lot of our communities not even understanding that we have a disparity. People will walk to your door and have no idea that LGBT people smoke at higher rates than other people. They won't understand how the fact that they smoke and all their friends smoke is related to stressors related to being LGBT. And oftentimes as part of cessation, you're going to have to help educate them on that because otherwise they're just not connecting the dots in a way that helps them take apart the dots. Also, sadly, our leaders rarely see it as a priority. And just we're going to give an example, okay? HIV is all over the LGBT communities. We have a lot of health infrastructure with that, which is good. We should, right? Absolutely. But in comparison, tobacco affects three times as many LGBT people, doesn't just affect a subset, but affects like all the LGBT pretty evenly, and it kills people faster from our newest data, and it has a cure. All those things, and yet the number of HIV programs to tobacco programs is like a multiple of 100 practically. So you can see how all this tobacco industry focus has meant we just don't have infrastructure to deal with it. So very few of us understand that it's killing us. Very few of us understand that it's absolutely run away our top health issue. Yet if you ask most LGBT people or leaders, they won't even list it in the top three. Okay, so now I'm going to gallop through language here. And this is just because we find that providers who aren't familiar with the communities often stumble because you want to do the right thing, but you don't know what to say or you don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to act like an idiot. So the first thing I'm going to say is that it's better to, if you've got good intentions, to bumble forward and make a mistake than it is to be freeze, okay? Because usually good intentions can really be felt, and not doing anything can come across looking like bad intentions by accident. So the definition differences, L, G, and B are sexual orientation, lesbian, gay, bisexual, who you partner with, right? T is a different one. T is your gender identity, or your own sense of what your own gender is, compared to what you were assigned on your birth certificate as a sex, okay? So here's a bunch of words that have been used for these different things, and in the next slide now, we're going to kind of sort them into what categories they fall into. Whoops, and then I'm going to, keep clicking. I can click. I can do it. Good boy. Yeah, there we go. Okay, there we go. Finally. Oh, shoot. One too far. Okay. So you see sex is whether you're male or female. Sexual orientation would be lesbian, gay, bisexual, heterosexual, queer, things like that, straight. Gender or gender role can be male, female, masculine, or feminine. Gender identity, some of the common words, and there's others too. Transgender, transsexual, male, female, gender queer. There's obviously, you're going to see other words too, like drag queens, studs, things like that. Sometimes they are specific to a subpopulation or more frequently used by a subpopulation. But the big thing you need to know with words is not to change it if someone uses a word to you, but instead echo back their language. And that's going to be the hardest for a few down here, like queer and genderqueer, that we know are really stigmatized. So the first thing I'm going to tell you is that it's not as stigmatized as the word we know with the African-American communities that we don't use, right? So it's not as volatile as that for a lot of the younger population especially, but honestly, I was even taught it, and I'm 47. Queer was a term of pride that we used as we were growing up, and that was very connected with a positive identity. So if someone comes in and says that they're queer, you shouldn't be renaming them to something else and say, oh, you're a lesbian or something like that, because basically it can mean something very different to them. You don't need to know what it means. Just echo their words back, and if you're uncomfortable with it, just be like, so you refer yourself as queer, right? So it's fine if I call you queer. Just do that, and you're good. And then on here, I always ask the live trainees, which words don't you know? So I'm going to go through the ones or not as familiar with. I'll go through the ones people aren't as familiar with. Queer and genderqueer are two that often come up, okay? So what does queer mean? It can basically, again, used mostly by the younger generation, but not exclusively, it can basically mean a little bit more, I'm in the other category, but I'm not going to commit to exact details. So usually that refers to sexual orientation. Sometimes genderqueer is kind of the same thing for gender identity. Sometimes it means you're a little bit, it means basically that that's what you choose to identify as, and you're not going to be more specific as that. And in some ways, especially since we know that people behave very differently than just small sub-labels, it probably is a more accurate way to describe a lot of LGBT people than just you're a lesbian and then you happen to sleep with a lot of bio boys. You know what I mean? So there's a way that queer can be actually really handy because it doesn't really nail you down. It just says, I'm not in the mainstream part. I'm in the other part, right? Genderqueer, same thing, except it has also, you're referring to your gender identity is not kind of the mainstream gender identity. It's other somehow. Then the other ones that people always have questions about would be transsexual versus transgender. So transsexual, if you can imagine a football field with, I'll get in the center of my finger, football field with female on a goalpost, male on a goalpost, okay? Gender identity can actually kind of be anywhere along in the center, the idea of, broader gender identity. It can be in the middle of that football field. It just doesn't have to be in an end zone, right? So if you're transsexual, what that means is you like the end zones. You don't need the middle of the field. You just need the exact opposite end zone than you were assigned at birth, right? So if you're assigned male, that means you actually identify as female instead, okay? And the other way around. So transsexual, stay in the end zone, but the opposite than they're assigned at birth. And, as people always ask, does that mean you're post-op? So the quick answer there is no, because post-op's all about money, and we prefer not to have people's identity just be based on whether they have $100,000 to do a bunch of surgeries, right? So if someone says they're transsexual, don't require them to have the $100,000 for surgery. Just respect their identity, and that means, and it's harder, because that means there are people who come across and you read them as male, but they actually say, look, my name's Roberta, please refer to me as she. And you got to do a little bit of practicing to make that go smoothly. But the truth is, as long as Roberta knows you're trying, she will be fine with you stumbling a few times. And don't make a big deal if you do stumble. Just keep going forward, okay? Transgender can be one of two things. Either can be an umbrella for anybody whose gender identity is different than the mainstream. The second way it can be used is, if we're back to our football field here, it can mean kind of the yard lines between the end zones, someone who's not exactly all one or all the other. That's actually what I identify as, somewhere like really close to male, but maybe a little bit near the female, you know, so maybe the like 10-yard line near the male end zone or something like that, right? So it can be a blend, saying it's not just two, right? We got more options in this world. We got a big world. The way I like to think of it is, you got a lot of three-leaf clovers in the world, but then every so often four-leaf clovers keep popping up, and that's the way it is with this. Speaking of which, you're going to see gender identity, sexual orientation in all historical eras of the world, all races, all socioeconomic classes, everything like that. So it's just four-leaf clovers keep popping up. Okay, so that actually is, wait a second, good, excellent, I'm on good time. Okay, now I'm going to gallop through what to do and what this means for cessation at your place so that you can be a better person serving LGBT folks all around, all right? And then we're going to have our time for questions. And let me just check. Still nothing in the chat box? I see nothing. Oh, sorry. There are some questions. I saw that. Just a second while I read. Oh, interesting. This is, how do you start questions about whether they smoke? And are there smoking cessation programs specifically for LGBT folks? Unfortunately, there aren't nationwide specifically for LGBT folks. You're going to have to literally do a search in your area. I know that a good place to start, really probably in New York State, would be the center in New York City, because they have offered them historically for quite a long time. And I know, obviously, a lot of you aren't geographically close to New York City, but they probably do know what is in the rest of New York State as well. So it really varies on the region. I can't give you one that would kind of work for all areas, because they're really rare. As a lot of people know, in-person cessation programs are kind of like unicorns these days. They're not really being funded very much, so LGBT ones are certainly not being funded very much. And then telephone navigation to cancer patients, what's the best way to ask them if they smoke? I think that would be, I would, you know, it's recommended with this type of thing that you actually put that in an intake of their vital signs in any kind of, any kind of medical interaction. And so literally it's kind of like, and I don't know if you do vital signs on the phone, but then if that's the case, put in the demographics, because basically this is always basic information you need about people. Have you smoked 100 or more cigarettes in your lifetime is the standard question of how you start. But make sure it's in the beginning of the demographic section, because that way you shouldn't have to ask each person individually, plus it kind of makes it a little more value-laden if you have to ask individually. Instead, just make it part of the intake, the demographics, and or the vital signs, because that's going to make a monster difference. Okay. Keep the questions coming. We love that. And now let me jump into what you're going to do differently as a set of providers. First thing that you need to know, in addition to that, what I was talking about related to the discrimination, is that the health discrimination is really common too. So you're very likely to see people who've experienced it themselves and or have a bunch of friends that have experienced it too. I'm sorry, I can't seem to get back to the video screen, so I hope I haven't accidentally drifted out of it, but I'm going to presume I'm... there we go. Yeah, I'm still in it. Okay, good. Now I can see myself again now. Most I can see Barbara, who's my neon anchor here. I love that shirt. Okay, so you're going to see a bunch of quotes here. 1 of 5 transgender people report being turned away from a medical provider for being trans. That's from a survey that was taken 2 years ago. So this is not old information, and that's a horrific statistic. So that means, especially the trans population, you're going to see people where they are just as willing to worry that you might say, oh, you're trans, get out of here, as anything else. And they have reason to worry about that. LGBT people routinely report avoiding health care when they can't find a welcoming doctor. So that means if you have fewer choices on who your doctors are, if you aren't given options to pick your own doctor or find who your friends use, things like that, you can easily say, yeah, maybe I'll just try it next year, which means also they may not have a history of as much prophylactic care or as much ongoing maintenance care. Recent surveys of medical professionals routinely show substantive percentages of them who strongly associate negative feelings with LGBT people and are willing to say it on a survey. So it's not one of those things where, like, you know, some things we've kind of been taught that's not acceptable, we should hide it. Sadly, with the LGBT population, we're not even to that dubious level yet. We're still at the point where people feel free to say, yeah, I think that is really bad, or it's wrong, or it's against God, or something like that. And, of course, those feelings then too often leak into the professional interactions in a way that people can tell. Remember also that people just carry their whole history of experiences. So, you know, the fact that my worst interaction with a doctor was probably when I was 18 years old, and it might be, you know, it's 20 years ago now, it still walks into every office with me. So, and also, the worst interactions that my friends have had also walk into every office and every phone call and every medical interaction. So just remember that there's kind of an accumulated lifetime of stigma that we're always dealing with when people come to our door. So the upshot is here, oh, and this shouldn't say LGBT youth, I'm sorry, it should just say LGBT people. LGBT people are really likely to experience stressors and triggers related to being LGBT. We know that's why the smoking rate's so high. But they're really unlikely to presume that you are going to be welcoming until they see some flag that you're welcoming. And I'll give you a spoiler alert. That's how you should do your stuff differently. That's how cessation should be different, is that flag of welcoming. And we also know that hiding the LGBT status adversely affects treatment. It's really, since it's so related to the smoking rate, it would be like having the pink elephant in the room around cessation. And as you know with cessation, you got to get to those deep level triggers so you can't have a big issue related to a lot of triggers not be on the table. It's got to be there with everything. So the answer is, and now what we're going to go into, is you need to put out flags saying that you're not like so many of those other providers. You're actually incredibly welcoming, and they should feel free to come to you, talk about being LGBT, include it in the discussions related to cessation, or just be who they are, bring their partner, whatever it is, be who they are and have no fear. And that is just, that's the spoiler of what you should do differently, honestly. So ways to do this. One would be, have specific targeted outreach. Think of it this way. If your agency has any promotional materials, has any advertisements, has even things out in your waiting room, do any of those also include LGBT? And an easy way, honestly, to get a lot of LGBT confidence and faith is go talk to a local LGBT agency and then co-brand something with them. Because they've got a lot, big list of all the local people and everything like that. So if you can just convince them you're welcoming, do something with their name on it and your name on it, that's a great way for you suddenly to be, you know, shown as really welcoming to your whole local LGBT set of communities. So here's some examples of targeted outreach for cessation stuff. This is one built in Seattle. And you can see they kind of use the similar stuff to what existed. They just put a little queer wash on it. These are some posters we have that people can co-brand that just honestly have, you know, a tiny rainbow and a regular poster, really, right? And then this is one that CDC did just a year ago as part of the Tips from Former Smokers campaign. Again, just text, but they added a rainbow, and a rainbow is one of the secret welcoming signals to the LGBT community, right? Well, not so secret anymore, baby, but one of the welcoming signals, right? A rainbow stands for the LGBT communities. And then this actually is a nicer one that this year for Tips, they did a whole print ad campaign, and this is actually professionally developed. There's videos to go with this too, things like that from the CDC, for two lesbians, and one of them even got lung cancer, even though she didn't smoke, just from secondhand smoke. So it also gives that nice secondhand smoke lesson. Okay, so those are some target outreach. Now, how do you create a welcoming environment when they actually get to your door? So whatever your agency or business is, look at your farthest waves, make sure some of them are LGBT welcoming. Now move a step in, look at your agency or the call interaction, and how do we make that LGBT welcoming? Okay. First step from the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association is make sure your intake asks if people are LGBT. And I heard from the Quitline people earlier that the Quitline does ask if people are LGBT. Usually, since this is such a big fight to get this question on things, people know that it's not bigots who put it on, right? If it's been put on, then that's some sign that someone cares about making sure the communities are served well. So it is a good step, and the Institute of Medicine also recommends it. Put it on your intake form, put it on your Quitline intake. Make sure you ask the question and make it matter of fact. We actually have suggestions. I'm sorry, that thing I just flipped by is our best practices document, which I'm referring to a whole lot. It's available downloaded from our website. This is actually a question that was tested for the Quitlines, as a matter of fact, and also for general surveillance. It also works pretty well for things like intake forms and stuff like that. And the nice part about this, it's a combined question, so you can't say you don't have enough space for it. If you have space for one question, you can get all this on. A lot of times we see people do only LGB on a single question, which is sad because then you actually leave the most discriminated against subpopulation out of the mix. but it allows people to check all of these because, of course, you can be both transgender and also you have a sexual orientation. So since it's a check-all, it kind of just lets you put all the things into a box. This just says that question's been tested for real, science testing. Science-y stuff has happened. Okay, other strategies. Get referrals to LGBT support groups or agencies. The GSA stuff is from a youth thing that I forgot to take off. That's more if you're a youth-serving agency. See if you can help host one of the Gay State Alliances, but most of you probably are not that. But basically, make sure that you have resources for direct referrals in your area. And again, it can be that you refer them to the center in New York City, even if there's not anything more local. You can refer them, you know, to our website to look at information, things like that. But it's a way of showing you're welcoming, basically, right? Okay, so now that's outreach and then agency strategies. Now let's look at individual level strategies when you're actually talking to an LGBT person. We're going to go through these each individually really quickly here. But the quick summary is check if they're LGBT, be careful about your language, challenge your own biases and sometimes do a little practicing to make sure you're supportive. Watch to see if they're afraid to come out, and then if so, throw them a flag to help them come out. Don't dismiss LGBT stressors as being unrelated to cessation, because now you kind of understand with the prevalence rate so high, they're actually pretty darn intertwined. And if they've got some big issues going on, you can't get to cessation until some of their bigger stuff. It's like, you know, the hierarchy, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then be aware of how it may differ from the norm. So we're going to go into some details in each of these. First of all, looking to see if they're LGBT, make sure it's on that intake, but then if it is on the intake, check to see if it's there, okay? And because people tell us clearly that if they have to come out repeatedly, it's a little bit more of a stressor. And you don't know when they need to talk about their partner who smokes or something like that. So that means you should check to make sure it's there and have asked so that you're ready for that to come. Or check to see if they're trans. So if you've got a baritone who's saying, please call me Roberta, you're there beforehand and you're not caught by surprise. Being careful with those language choices. Basically, LGBT is the most kind of neutral and common thing. You can certainly see extra things on it like Two-Spirit for the American Indian population. Intersex is now being added to LGBT a little bit more. For a while it was kind of put on wantonly, but now it's being a little more deliberate. Intersex are people, I'm sorry I didn't define it earlier, who actually are born with their genitalia or the chromosomes not exactly matching exactly male or exactly female, but more of a little bit of a blend. And there's sometimes some very different issues with intersex people, but the general concept of stigma related to sex issues is still an underlying current, and that can certainly cause a higher smoking rate. But so LGBT is kind of the most general terminology. Echo their words back. If you're uncomfortable, then you can ask them so you can echo it back. Definitely use the same pronoun they refer to themselves with. If you mess it up, don't make a big deal because that just draws out the awkward. Don't worry. If you mess it up, I assure you lots of other people mess it up too. They're used to it. Just keep going forward. Say, I'm sorry. And if you don't know what pronoun someone prefers, I'll tell you what. Use my secret trick. Ask them. We all do it, actually, truth be told. It's like, do you prefer he or she? It can just get routine. And if you've never done it before, practice in the shower one morning. Do you prefer he or she? Do you prefer he or she? Do you prefer he or she? Eventually, you'll just be able to say it. It's not as big of an issue, right? Queer, fag, and dyke are the three words that have the most negative value laden. But if they use it to you, they could be challenging you or something like that. Then part of it is you want to show them you're comfortable. Fine. Use it. You know, if you need to ask, ask. But then just use it back. You can remember that queer started as a pejorative, but for a lot of people, especially younger people, it's a very positive statement right now. And don't forget, you can ask if you're unsure of something. Again, freezing in place can make you accidentally look like a bigot. We don't want you to do that. Jumping in with good intentions is much better than freezing in place. Okay, so for challenging your own biases to ensure you can remain supportive, I've got a little case study here. We're not going to go through it. But the idea is, okay, so you now have someone who's listed as Robert Cartwright on their files, but then, you know, someone maybe with a baritone gets on and says, actually, they prefer to be called Nancy. So this is something that's going to be one of the biggest challenges, because I'll tell you that part of our body that says, you're a boy, you're a girl, is so kind of pre-thinking that it happens before we ever, you know, get to think about what's going on, which means we have to go back there and change our subconscious work before we can get to saying Nancy easily. And some tips on this would be actually, honestly, again, practice. And also, here's another tip. I don't think I have it. Hold on. I don't think I have it later. Do I? No. Here's another tip. If you want to be extra affirming, trans people do this a lot, find reasons to say Nancy a few more times in the conversation. Not only will it help you get more comfortable with it, but it'll show Nancy that you really are supporting her in her gender identity and that you really are a welcoming person. And considering all the stress that Nancy might be receiving in the rest of her life, you could be at that point an incredibly safe haven they really want to come back to and talk to more, which helps you with the cessation experience, right? Okay. Watch for scanning or avoidance from clients. So here's a little example. Someone talks with Paula. I knew she was dating someone, but she didn't seem to want to talk about it. I asked if the other person smoked too. She just said yes and moved on to some other point. You know that whether your partner smokes or not is a big deal, but Nancy just really wasn't talking about this. So what do you do in this case? And I've worked with a lot of groups, and honestly, it really comes down to this one simple trick. Say something to normalize it in a way that doesn't make a big issue out of it. Like, for example, it makes a big difference if your partner smokes, so I don't know if he or she does, but if they do, it can really affect your own cessation attempt. So, again, just right in the middle, he or she means, I don't care if your partner is a boy or a girl, obviously, and you're also doing something to, like, say, it's okay to come out. Because if they are avoiding something like that, we've had it happen, people do it all the time. Every LGBT person has done it. We kind of avoid the pronouns if we're worried about safety. Then that means you got to put out that flag of welcoming somehow, and that's a great way to do it. Don't dismiss LGBT-related stressors as being unrelated to tobacco cessation. So here's another one. All these things actually really happen. While I was in a counseling session with Mark, he told me he was smoking and using drugs. He's also gay and thinks some people have found out about it. So this is, an easy thing. This guy is obviously closeted. Now his secret may be out, and that means that secret being out could be the biggest stressor in his life, and kind of in the Maslow's hierarchy, it means he doesn't have shelter or food, and you can't get to cessation until that first beer stressor is worked with. So in that kind of scenario, look at having some resources ready. Do you have, you can look up on the psychologist.com website, who's LGBT-friendly? Can he talk with an LGBT therapist specifically, or LGBT-friendly therapist, specifically about the issue of coming out? Because he's probably just not going to get to cessation if he's got these bigger stressors sitting in between. And then also just be aware of how cessation is likely to differ from the norm. And again, I told you, we don't quit differently because we know every person quits in an individual way, right? Your stressors hold you back, and, then we've got tricks to help them get over it, right? But we are more likely to have some things that you should be aware of, okay? Trigger stressors related to discrimination, delay, avoid, have poor health care or a history of avoided health care, have lots of friends who smoke, and actually, the next one, get needed social support in high smoking venues. If you think that people usually get social support from, like, the people they live with, their friends, their bio family, their workplace, well, several of those may be hostile to an LGBT person. And their neighbors is another one. So, your neighbors, your bio family, and your workplace could all be unwelcoming to LGBT people, which means you're much more reliant on your friends. And it's a cessation that has meant that literally people do the, old cessation thing of, okay, don't go to the bar because that's where people smoke. And LGBT people have come back and said, no, I have to because that's the only place I have any friends and any social support, and that's a valid thing. So we have to be more creative about, okay, if you got to go to the bar where everybody's smoking, what are you going to do then to still try and quit in place? More likely to feel social isolation, much more likely to, even if it's well hidden. Have related addictions, face bullying, and be struggling with mental health problems, all stigma-based. Evidence shows that we're less likely to have school-based support and work-based support, have birth family support, and we're also, sadly, not likely to even have any clue how this relates to smoking. So, again, you might have to be the one to talk to them a little bit about how these things are connected. So just think, as a provider, are you asking and educating people about these related issues? And, importantly, are you putting out that flag of welcoming? And that is pretty much what I've got here. A couple resources. This is a quit pamphlet that we have that you can co-brand if you like. And then that is our blog and our website as well. And with that, I'm going to turn this gallop of information back over to Pat Bax. And, Pat, I think you've got a few things to add before we add questions.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Scout, for your excellent and very informative presentation. Lots to think about and digest. On behalf of the New York State Smokers Quit Line, welcome to our new and our returning participants joining us today. And thank you to those of you who are familiar with and who do utilize our Quitline services. However, if you are new to the Quitline, we are a free, confidential, and evidence-based cessation service. We're based at Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo, sunny, hot Buffalo today, 92 degrees. We provide cessation health and resources for everyone in New York State. And Roswell Park Cancer Institute, we're very excited to announce the release and our posting on our website of our annual report for 2012. And this report outlines the Quitline service utilization, who is using the services, our growing Opt-to-Quit provider program, and so much more. And we also have added a smoking and finances video, which looks at how spending money on cigarettes can cut deeply into household budgets while emphasizing the benefits of quitting. So I do invite you to, after our call today, look at our report and video in more detail, and you can find those both on our website. A tobacco user can call the Quitline directly or register for nicotine replacement therapy online, or they can be referred by a provider. So we offer free coaching, nicotine replacement patches, motivational support, and a wide range of resources, as you can see on our website at nysmokefree.com, a free online community, and our messaging service. Our provider referral program includes our Opt-to-Quit program for hospitals and healthcare facilities, as well as downloadable materials, which are located under the Health Provider and Partner section at nysmokefree.com. And the Quitline can assist and support any hospitals with the newly passed smoke-free hospital law, so please contact us for support. In relation to our topic today, as Dr. Scout mentioned, when tobacco users contact most Quitlines, and ours especially includes this service, we will ask a caller, any caller who is agreeing to an interview. Our Quit coaches do ask to verify their gender, and then they ask the questions that Dr. Scout mentioned, whether or not the caller considers himself or herself to be one of the following: heterosexual or straight, gay or lesbian, bisexual. And if a client pauses or refuses or says none of the above, our coach will say, you can name a different category if that fits you better. Now, to provide you with a perspective on our responses since January 1st, of the almost 32,700 callers who actually agreed to be interviewed, 29,413 actually identified themselves as being heterosexual or straight, 818 gay or lesbian, 430 bisexual, 200 said other, and 1,752 preferred not to answer. We do include in our training programs for our Quit coaches tailoring cessation messaging for LGBT tobacco users who do contact the Quitline for assistance. So if you're looking for more details about the Quitline and our services, please contact us directly at 1-866-697-8487. And please keep in mind that the Quitline is available to help you as you're planning activities related to the Great American Smokeout, which this year is on November 21st. So thank you again for participating on our call and for all your assistance in helping your tobacco-using patients to become and stay tobacco-free. So at this time, Erin, we'll open it up for questions.
The floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. If at any point your question has been answered, you may press 7 again to disable your request.
Please press 7? Was that what you said? Press 7?
Yes, you can press
Great.
Number 7. And we do have a question on the line from Laura Giardino. Laura?
Hi. Yeah, my name is Laura. I'm a nurse practitioner with the Suffolk County Learn to be Tobacco-Free program. And we do include it in our, the questions in our intake. I'm just wondering, when I interview a person, if they have identified as gay or bisexual or whatever they've identified as, should I address that if they don't address it, or shall I just, you know, treat them like anybody else?
Well, that's a good question, and you don't need to address it. Like, you don't necessarily say, you know, I see that you're black or Latino or something like that necessarily. But what you do want to do is be particularly aware and, again, look for those options to throw out a welcoming flag, okay? Especially if your intake is not, you're not the one who did the intake, because they may not know that you know it, and whether you know it or not, they still don't know if you're safe. So if you were to see something like that, I would find a way to put like he or she, your partner, or something like that in as a welcoming flag so that they just feel extra safe in disclosing it and how it relates.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. I just have one other question.
Yeah.
I had a patient who, his name was Eddie, but I saw him over a period of 6 months, and he was going through surgical procedure. This is a number of years ago, and I really wasn't sure how to address him as he became more and more female. It was evident to me that he looked like a woman, but he never corrected me when I called him Eddie, and I, at the time, was uncomfortable with asking him, should I call you something else?
It's a great question. So then the simple answer is ask instead of don't ask, because when you don't ask, it's kind of like that's the awkward thing in the room you're not talking about, right? So just be like, Eddie, you obviously are, you know, going through, you can say gender confirmation surgery is actually another way to say it nicer than sexual reassignment, because gender confirmation means it's confirming who you really are, right? And you're going through gender confirmation surgery, things like that. So obviously, I would guess you probably don't want to be called Eddie anymore. What should I call you now, or what do people call you now? And then I would actually encourage you to use the identified pronoun and preferred name as early in the process as you figure out that it relates. So basically, ask the question as early as you can tell something's up, and then whatever the answer is, start using it as early as possible. Because again, we don't want it to have to be based on whether or not Eddie slash Maria has as much money to go through more surgeries, right? So as soon as you get a sense that there's like someone's trans, ask them early, what pronoun do you prefer, what name do you prefer, and then keep using that consistently.
Okay, thank you.
Also, another point would be a good way, if you have them on the intake and you're wondering how to bring it up, is if you do have more information, like our quick pamphlet for LGBT people, you can say, I see you put down your LGBT on the intake. You know that we have particular information for LGBT folks and we'd be happy to mail it out to you if you want.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Again, if you do have a question, please press the number 7 on your telephone keypad. Please hold while we wait for the next question.
I know I was not this self-explanatory. Please ask some things, anything.
We do have a question on the line from Ashley Marshall.
Hi, I have a question regarding the age that the LGBT population starts smoking. Is there any noted difference that the age is a little bit earlier because they start experiencing different stressors?
It actually does, from the available evidence, show to be a little, I mean, we have 12-plus for the average population, right? So we see something earlier than that usually for the LGBT population from the data we can find. So it's not too far off, but it is still a little bit earlier. It's a great question. So, yeah, probably they may not even identify as LGBT then, but we can tell the stressors are working themselves out in their lives. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
If you have a question, please press the number 7. And we do have a question on the line from Janita Bell. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm sorry. I came in there a little late. I don't know if it was discussed already, but I would like to know, is it a difference between prescribing NRTs based on the gender or the sex, like the dosing of the medication?
Got it. Well, that is a little better question if people are transgender specifically. I can't answer exactly medical questions here, but the general sense from all the endocrinologists that I get is that most doctors really do know how to treat trans people, even with hormone replacement therapy. Treat it like the regular hormone replacement therapy guidelines we have for, like, older men, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of hormone replacement therapy that goes on. So however the NRTs apply to that existing guidelines for the, you know, gender-typical people,
yes,
apply them the same way to transgender people. Unfortunately, if there are major differences, we haven't done enough research to figure out what they are. So basically, it's really kind of a common sense area of activity. One thing that is different for trans folks related to smoking is that smoking is such a general depressant on your health and such a specific circulatory depressant. There's a lot of doctors around the country who will not do gender confirmation surgery unless the people are off cigarettes, because healing from the surgery is much, much worse.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
The next question comes from Catherine Tanner at Niang. Catherine?
Yes. Hi, Scout. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, excellent. So Los Angeles...
Los Angeles, you're not in New York State. What's going on there?
No, I'm in New
York. I'm kidding. I know it was open.
L.A. did outreach for tobacco cessation with their LGBT community.
Great.
Do you have a point of view on the effectiveness of that program or any other municipal health departments that are doing really good work with the LGBT community on this?
You know, the state of Minnesota did a whole big, they did the biggest effort that I know of around reaching the LGBT population related to cessation specifically. They created special posters. They actually paid us to test the question to make sure it could be on there too. They paid us to create that Quitline supplemental material brochure, things like that. So to what I know, they're the ones who've done the most exhaustive work around reaching out to the LGBT population locally and are definitely a good model. But in general, I don't know anybody who's tried to do it and done it poorly. The bigger question is, have you tried or not tried? And I would say that with, like, outreach and media, like, we're hitting this challenge a little bit at the federal level because the TIP campaign is mostly TV-based. TV is not the best way to reach LGBT folks. So, you know, look at alternate digital media opportunities, which can often be cheaper, or look at smaller media opportunities, or look at, like I said, partnering with specific organizations. Those are all great strategies. But I suspect most of you aren't struggling with a big TV budget as your biggest issue, so that doesn't apply to you as much. But other than that, if you're trying, you're usually doing a lot better than if you're not trying at all.
That's very helpful. Thank you for the information on Minnesota in particular.
Yeah, and also it's a really good strategy. If you are trying to do something locally, make sure you have LGBT folks on your community advisory body. Like most nonprofits would have a community advisory group. Most hospitals would, right? If you don't have LGBT folks on it, then you're just kind of like, you know, really shutting down a big avenue of information. And those are the people who should really give you the best information on what should happen locally, who should you partner with, things like that.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I also have a question on the line from Patricia Heisert. Patricia?
Hi, this is Stephanie speaking. I'm sitting with Patricia. I just first wanted to thank you. This was a very informative lecture. And my question is, how important is focusing on gender or sexual orientation when we work with newly diagnosed patients with cancer, and we mainly talk on the phone with patients?
Well, I'll tell you this. I actually, one of my sister agencies, the National LGBT Cancer Network, just did a big research study on the experiences of people who have been diagnosed with cancer who are LGBT in the system. And the findings were kind of horrific, I'm sorry to say. So first step is I would recommend you go to that organization, National LGBT Cancer Network, and download their report with all these findings. They ask hundreds of cancer patients, what would you tell doctors? And then I would say that it's even more important in a life-threatening situation where someone has to cycle through a bunch of doctors,
yep,
to make sure that they have at least the beginning doctor, if not hopefully all, is putting out that flag of welcoming and saying it's okay to be who you are, because you literally have people who will hide their partners, not bring them to any support groups, people who have been leave hospitals and go to hospitals that are hundreds of miles away because they're not welcome. They feel a chilly environment. They feel the frostiness of that healthcare provider who doesn't think that being LGBT is okay, things like that.
Right.
So it's even more important from the beginning on down to make sure that there's a flag of welcoming out, and also it's more important for the agencies too to set a standard whereby LGBT discrimination, whether it's overt or subtle, is just not okay. So we really, from that perspective, are working more with hospitals to be like, pass non-discrimination, post it in your patient bill of rights, and make it part of your routine employee training. Because, like, if I have to have annual JCO training or, you know, Joint Commission training saying, you know, like, no age discrimination, things like that, that's where you want to put LGBT too, because it sets an agency-wide policy of, no, this is how we want you to behave, and it helps people to then continue to do it in practice in person.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Makes sense.
The next question comes from Jody Parth. Jody?
Hi, Dr. Scout. Thank you so much for the presentation. This has been really enlightening. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to addressing the need for asking comprehensive questions about identity amongst electronic medical records. The electronic medical record is a key part of our work as cessation centers with providers, And one of the challenges we face is encouraging providers to have meaningful dialogue, even if the screens that are in front of them are asking the bare minimum questions.
Well, you do know that the Institute of Medicine and NIH and a bunch of LGBT groups have all come out with this idea that adding LGBT measures to electronic medical records, as well as all other demographic areas of healthcare, is actually advised. We would say that there's a little bit of a caveat. There's less work done on this than on surveillance. The caveat is it's not advised if it's going to be unsafe for them to come out. So you actually have to also make sure that the agency they come out to is not going to be a bunch of bigots in their face if they do disclose. I mean, there's some good ways to do this, too. You can put a non-discrimination statement on your electronic medical records. Non-discrimination statement is a beautiful thing that actually people who don't care about it, don't read it. Most of the population doesn't read it. But for LGBT people, we know we're sometimes in, sometimes out, which means we read it a lot to figure out if we're in, and it's a great way to flag welcoming. But so first of all, we absolutely do recommend that it's in, because if, you know, 4% of the population of the country is willing to tell total strangers they're LGBT, why would you not, as a doctor or their medical provider, be asking them that question that's so related to so many health discrimination issues they encounter? But then if it isn't in there, then again, kind of use the same principles as here. You've got to presume that people might, you're absolutely treating LGBT people, and if about 1 in 20 is not telling you about them being LGBT, then that means they'll tell strangers more than they'll tell you about issues related to their health. And that means you're not doing a good job of telling them it's welcoming, that they can be open with you about it too.
Thank you very much.
We also have a question on the line from Sayon Oslatavon. Go ahead.
Hello. Scout, thank you so much for the very important discussion on this, you know, increasingly important disparity that we have, and pointing it out and guiding us on what to do. So I just wanted to point out, just for all you guys in people in New York City, providers who are interested in getting more involved in kind of the advocacy and a lot more just involved in this community and affecting the health and addressing tobacco use in this community, the New York City Health Department has been working with American Cancer Society and the New York City Coalition for a Smoke-Free City to really do this and start this New York City LGBT smoke-free initiative. So,
love
and,
that.
Yes, and Scout has guided us on multiple aspects of this.
Oh, that's right. I have done that. I should have mentioned it. Sorry.
And I see that Elizabeth and Anne have shared the link that, and so you can follow that link that was shared on the chat board, and you can sign up to be part of this initiative. And we're kind of still, you know, recruiting people. We're going to have a meeting soon and try to figure out, you know, with LGBT-friendly organizations or LGBT organizations on what approaches we want to take to address the issue in this community. So thank you so much for this talk, Scout, and for the Cessation Centers and the Quitline for hosting.
Thank you. And before we go, I see the evaluations up there, too. Please do me a favor, fill out the evaluation. Be honest. Don't, you know, be a kiss-ass. Seriously, be honest. Help us figure out how to do it well. And if you did like it, then, you know, say so that we can also try and convince other people who are not as interested yet in whether they need it or not that maybe it would be valuable for them. Not too painful, at least, right?
Thank you, Dr. Scout. This is Anne Wendland again. I just wanted to let everyone know that our next webinar will be on Wednesday, November 6th at 12 p.m. Dr. Harlan Juster, our New York State Tobacco Control Program Director, will discuss adolescent tobacco use prevention. And today, on behalf of the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Tobacco Control, the Cessation Centers, and the New York State Smokers Quitline, I want to express our appreciation for this excellent presentation and thank all of you who participated in the call. This brings us to the end. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
This does conclude today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.